Welcome to Aligned. This is Sean Doyle, your host. I'm here today with Will Riley.
Hey, guys.
We're in the third of our 5 and 15 series around revenue operations. Today's focus is customer success. Why would we do this? Well, 61% of SMB businesses report that more than half of their revenue is coming from repeat customers. So this seems like a very important conversation. In the context of revenue operations, we are connecting all the parts of revenue operations, how the early stage demand gen stuff works together, the sales enablement when sales and marketing are handing off and working on closing deals, and then now the customer success portion of the conversation occurs. So we want to make sure everybody's on the same page, everybody's goals, people, and processes are aligned. We want to make sure there's visibility up and down the pipeline. We want to make sure sales activities and customer engagement systems are in place and that forecast can occur so business leaders can invest and grow confidently and predictably. Will, let's start in with what your insights are around customer success.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, as you mentioned, Sean, there's, especially with the emergence of SaaS over the years, customer success has just been a vital part of a lot of organizations, whether you're in software, whether you're selling B2C, B2B, the data is just so compelling around the revenue that we're getting from current customers, the revenue that we're losing from current customers, the opportunity for upsell, cross-sell opportunities, and then those clients that are actually referring people to your to purchase your products and services.
So I think we're going to do a podcast on marketing technology.
Yeah.
And I think we are going to probably discuss how really it should be called revenue technology, not marketing technology. That's our last episode. So hold on for that one.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's going to be a good one there. Yeah, the research shows 89% of customers switch to a competitor if they have a poor customer experience. And we may think, you know, classic examples, fast food, or you go to a nice restaurant and just the difference in bad and good customer service. Mm. There's great books out there like Raving Fans by Ken mm-hmm. Blanchard mm-hmm. that are out there. And there's some really good things that we would definitely recommend on how to enhance customer experience. But what's very important about this number is at any point in a customer's journey, they can move all the way back to stage two, contemplating whether or not you matter to them.
When you mention all these stages, I know what you're referring to is our point of view around sales and marketing and customer success and how you can frame everything in what we call cognitive marketing. Cognitive marketing defines that there are steps, there are six stages in the change from unaware that something exists or unaware of how something might help you. That could be a product, a service. It was originally around a behavioral change, all the way through to when you've made that change. In business terms, we call that an exchange relationship. So the scientific conversation around customer success is actually called maintenance if you're a behavioral scientist. So this maintenance thing is pretty important if 89% of your customers are switching at some point. So when you say they revert, they go back to stage two, that means they're going back to contemplating. They're thinking about new offers, new options, new ideas. Even if you, the person serving that customer, are offering those same things, if someone's unaware that you offer that, let's say I've sold you a service that does A, well, you might have services B, C, and D, but if the customer doesn't know that, then they're going to move, they're going to change, right? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. I mean, a great question to ask yourself, when's the last time you've done a full capabilities presentation to your current clients?
Mm-hmm.
Because what they came in with may not be at all what they need next year.
I'm reminded years ago of a project that we did with a large financial services company, and we were doing $500,000 kind of job. It was a big gig. And somewhere through the program, the chief marketing leader came to us and said, "Hey, here's our new logo." And we said, What do you mean your new logo? And we said,
"Oh, no.
You got a new logo? We're in the middle of this massive, important strategic understanding of your company and representing you to your prospect. But you could have talked to us about the logo." And they said, I'll never forget, they said, "Well, we didn't know you did logos." Well, so doing logos is not core to who we are. We're not an identity company, but it certainly was in the purview. So they duplicated their efforts, and I lost revenue. So we began something called Did You Know? So all of our customers began emails to saying, did you know that we, and we'd give them an example. So I understand now in the context of behavioral science, I was trying to maintain behavior, the behavior of buying from me.
Yeah.
So I got one thing I would say with customer success, I would ask the executive listening to this dialogue, what intentionality do you have around this 61% of the companies that get half their revenue from their current customers in repeat purchase? What intention do you have? What plans do you have? How have you mapped out that part of the journey? It's just as important as this net new customer. In fact, it's probably even more important.
Yeah, absolutely. Because research shows that 90% of customers that have an excellent experience repeat and buy from you again. So why wouldn't you invest in that?
I think intuitive we know that. But do you have a good example of that? Okay, as a leading question, I know you do.
Why, yes, I do.
There you go. Let's share it. Yeah, I think what's important is this intersection of marketing, sales, and customer success departments. So the reason I know you have this story is this is an interesting engagement, a time and engagement when marketing has supported a customer coming through the journey, sales has been helping through that journey, and then in the end, doing the heavy lifting of closing the deal. There's been a handoff, and now customer success is in charge. So there's a lot going on, even from a coordination standpoint, which is the goal of revenue operations and the underlying technology that support it. So how is that happening? I want you to share the story of this great intersection.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we were doing one of our on-site visits with a sales team and just noticing, you know, I was in the bullpen with the guys and I was hearing some phone calls and they have a pretty high close rate if it's an inbound lead versus an outbound lead. So they had a few inbounds come in and they were actually current customers. So I was like, oh, well, that's, you know, I'd love to get some feedback on that. And they said, well, you know, we've got this standard process that they have to do every year and it only makes, you know, 10% of what I should be making on a phone call. Well, I took that problem back to our team and we continued to dive into those low-level phone calls, those low-level revenue-producing phone calls, and met with their operations team, the sales team, the marketing team, and then our firm met and recommended that if they were to implement an e-commerce solution for those low-level purchases, it would actually save them $500,000 in LTV. And that was an absolute wow factor that the current customer, we hadn't realized it, had been asking for years. So whenever you look at supporting data of them automatically making repeat, if we improve our customer experience, and then if we can maintain them as current customers by showing that we're innovative and creating a new way of purchasing that makes things easier, it was a really easy no-brainer for them to implement this kind of solution.
So that was driven from an internal operations cost reduction standpoint and an efficiency of human capital. I hate that phrase, human capital, but you know, the way people work, it frees up time instead of doing this repetitive purchase. My guess is you could have driven to that also if you would have done a current customer study and understood.
Absolutely.
The current customer didn't want to have to call somebody and get a call back, and they wanted it automated too. It's not that they don't love your people and don't want to talk to your people. If I can order my coffee with one click on a webpage, and it can take me 30 seconds and I don't have to deal with it. And that's just the life that people lead now, right? Customer
least
improvement.
Least path of resistance, right?
Right. And in behavioral science terms, again, it's maintenance, right? If I've got this behavior, I know how to repeat this behavior and I'm in control of this behavior, that just simplifies everything. It also gives you a competitive advantage as you're trying to reduce that risk of customer melt.
So, right. And if you maintain that current customer, we know that if they have a great experience, they're 90% more likely to have a repeat. Well, then what you're doing is you're really trying to enable an advocate. You're trying to get them to be a raving fan or an advocate of your brand so that they then refer their network to your products and services, right?
Yeah, and everybody always says, you know, it costs about 7 times more to get a new customer than to retain the one you have. There's probably some validity to that argument. I don't know what the math is specifically. But anecdotally, I think that's probably true. If you look at all the work marketing and sales has to go through to get somebody in.
Five stages of...
Right, versus holding on. Yeah, so it does argue for that insight. And let me explain how a good customer success program can lower your cost of sales. And here's how. So there, you do generate net new leads and net new customers out of a customer success program because people will refer. So the value of this customer, this advocate actually, is high. Some people say that 600% to 1400% more value in an advocate than what you would call a detractor. Well, that's a reference to Net Promoter Score methodology. It's a popular methodology. It's an important methodology. It's a simple way for a company to understand where it stands. But let's start applying that data. Like it's a great data point to know anecdotally, but what is the data? What do you do with that data? If you have a high advocacy number, then that tells you that you've got leverage that should generate net new customers at a far lower cost than traditional marketing and sales operations can generate a net new customer. So how's that work? Well, advocates talk, right? If I'm in business, a particular type of business, and I'm visiting with somebody in that same type of business, I'm going to share. If I'm a promoter, an advocate, I'm going to say to this person who's never heard of you, your company, your service, your product, your offering, I'm going to say, hey, I'm using XYZ, and they're great. It saves me 10% a year. It saves me hours. I don't have to worry about it. It solves this problem. And then the person I'm sharing this story with, they're what we would call early stage, right? We call it stage one. Their consciousness has been raised and there's been an act of social liberation. Those are two processes that are effective early stage based on the behavioral science. It's elevated that person to contemplate. That's where they come to a website. That's where they generate the lead. That's where the salesperson calls and says, oh yeah, I was told by Joe Smith that I should be using this product or this service. And it's an easy, fast path to closing. So it doesn't take all that legwork. So customer success is a valid way and an important way to generate net new business.
Is that the same thing as social selling? You know, you hear that a lot of getting a referral from your network or, hey, go call on your friends and tell them. Tell me the difference in what you're talking about.
So I think there is a difference. It's a great question. Social selling to me is horrible. People are taught.
Agreed.
People are taught to leverage their personal networks to try to gain new business. Well, I think that's manipulation because what I'm doing is I'm leveraging the fact that I know you will. So you tell me because of our personal relationship, three other people like you, so I can go sell them. Well, now I'm saying our personal relationship's in jeopardy unless you give me these other names. Or you're telling me
find those names.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, I mean, come on. So it also, it gives you reason to even question doing business with me. Hmm. Many people in sales are taught it's a relational sale. Well, I think that's a high risk venture for a business owner because if it's a relational sale, business executive, if your sales staff is out there relationally selling, when your sales staff leaves you, they're going to take that business because the business is built on the relationship. It's not built on the value proposition of your product or your service. So I think that social selling model is high risk for the business owner and it's bad just as a human being because I'm manipulating using my relationship, my friendship. In fact, when I'm teaching a sales process, I always encourage the only golf that should get played, the only dinner that should happen is always with late stage prospects. Late stage. I don't want you building relationships to try to sell something. That's backwards. That's manipulation. Now, what it is, that's terrible English. I hope my English teacher is not listening. What happens with social media? So I'm just going to riff on that word social. Social media does have value because if it's an authentic expression of your belief in my value that I provided as a service or product provider, if you're using your social media account, I'm not endorsing you. I'm not asking you to do this. I'm not paying you to do this. It is a valid expression of what I've done, the thing I've brought to the world. Now that's got a lot of value. And that's the disintermediation of a business's ability to control the dialogue, right? Customers are using social media with other customers naturally. So it gives you, again, reason. Well, it's going to point to innovation as well, but it gives you a reason to have great customer success programs. You want the person, even if your product and service isn't the best, yeah. you could say the way that's delivered is the best.
Yeah.
That's enough reason sometimes to not use the best product. And sometimes I won't use the best product because the customer experience is so bad, even though it's the highest value product. I just don't want to associate with it, or I don't like it because of the way I'm treated.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
and what you're describing too is, you mentioned, you know, different programs. And I think that's the issue that we see a lot in customer success, is that it's just a one-off loyalty program, or it's a BOGO randomly. It's just not thought through strategically. And what you're really missing are, you got to have a dashboard. You're missing your metrics there in terms of what you should be reporting on, what should you be held accountable to. And some, you know, what we see a lot with our RevOps team is, we come in looking for, is there an NPS from a benchmark perspective? Is there a current LTV for a current customer? What's your customer churn, your revenue churn? And we start to really break this down into about 10 different categories of just ideas of how to retain the current customer. Because if we really focus on your own data, because again, these data points are great, about 90% more likely, 89%, you know, move maybe to a competitor, but you really have to understand your own customer and your own processes and use your own data to make your own decisions. And I think that's, people read this, they read these books, mm-hmm. and they go implement other people's strategies without knowing who they're actually selling to.
In our pursuit of helping middle market companies and even small business on the larger end of the scale of small business, there's a high level of focus or suspicion even of the money being spent in marketing. For some reason, the money being spent in sales doesn't, I guess people understand sales better.
Right.
So there's this focus on and high value or high suspicion of this marketing ROI. Well, so in our focus around middle market companies and rapidly growing ones especially, they want to have a good lens to look at the cost of sales. So a focus around a sales pipeline and a report around a sales pipeline is very common. There's a suspicion around marketing typically, and is marketing really providing value? So you try to create this attribution around marketing, but it's difficult. And then you get into, well, did sales do it? Did marketing do it? What I rarely hear is this conversation around customer success. What is the investment in customer success? And what's that dashboard? What's that metric look like? So I think if I was an executive today, I would want to talk to my CFO. Or if you're a CFO, I think you should talk to your executive team and say, could we adjust? Could we move off of this sales pipeline reporting? Could we move off of only looking at marketing in this isolated box? And could we add customer success and create, I'd call it a revenue funnel instead of a sales pipeline?
Yeah, I love that.
You know, I just think that's an important shift.
That's so good.
And marketing technology, again, we're going to talk about it later. Marketing technology offers, it's an easy offer. It's hard to do. We know that for a fact. It takes effort, time, money, but marketing technology does give you that ability. And honestly, when you look at a revenue metric instead of these broken out silos, and I'm not saying don't measure those silos. Each silo should have its own measurement and should be responsible and accountable.
It should be a shared revenue goal.
And a revenue goal, you could take, here's the revenue that was created this year. Here's the investment in these three departments. Divide. We understand the ROI. That's
absolutely,
that's not hard. You can do that today. And that's just something where you've got a benchmark. It's kind of like an NPS score, that net promoter score. Just get a benchmark. Start. Have a number. Then get more sophisticated later. All right. Well, we have been in our 5 for 15. I don't think we've hit 15 yet. 15 minutes. So
we'll try for the next episode, see if we can get there.
Listeners, if we hit 15 because of our audio engineer's incredible editing skills, Van, you going to do something incredible?
I'm going to blow your mind.
All right. Van's made a big promise.
Well, tell us quick, Sean, on that. What are some of these core principles about how can I innovate and evolve my customer success. I might not even have this department. I might not even have this nomenclature in the organization. So kind of talk about just culture shift and the core principles of a successful customer success program.
There's a lot I would offer. There's probably three, and I would focus on these three things. Pay attention to the onboard, that intersection when sales and marketing has been carrying the load and somebody becomes a customer. They, in behavioral science terms, become an exchange relationship. So what is that? And then how do you maintain that? I think I would focus on that handoff period. And this is going to sound a lot like good marketing 101, but shift the point of focus from your product or service and talk about the customer. Well, you're an expert in customer success. What insights would you have on that? How do you make that shift?
Yeah, I think you've got to look at your ideal customer versus who you currently have, because who is currently buying from you may not be your ideal market. I know we oftentimes call these type people a bluebird. They just show up. You don't really know how. You don't really know why. You had an exchange and then they flew away. Right. So we're not saying that those are bad or that you don't have bluebird clients, but you shouldn't focus your time there. If a bluebird only generates 10,000, but your ideal generates 200,000, we have to shift our buying strategy and our renewal strategy on that 200,000. And if we look at these different metrics that we talked about mm-hmm. earlier on our dashboard, then we're going to have an idea of where to shift our money. Where do we spend those marketing dollars more effectively? Because you're right, sales is guilty for taking people to golf, and marketing is guilty for marketing to the wrong type customer. So mm-hmm. if you really understand your ideal and shift the focus to the people that are really generating, you know, call them the cash cows, then that's going to be a huge shift for you.
Brilliant. Finally, I'd say ask regularly. So what do I mean by that? There are significant companies we've worked for who have no forum built for customer feedback, customer input. We're going to dive into innovation in another podcast episode, and we'll talk about an idea there. But the key is there should be regular structure. So if you're a large company and you've got an annual conference and your customers are gathering, then great. Do that. Use that as a function to listen. I mean, everybody's got all these email tools now. You could get a free email tool even and do a customer study. I'd encourage you to get a third party to design that customer study to get that feedback. Otherwise, you're just going to lead the witness, you know, i.e., you really like us, right? You know, that's a leading question, right? Third parties also allow the freedom for a customer to say the truth. It was like, I like you, right? I'm going to have a difficult conversation this afternoon with one of my vendors who they're underperforming. Well, at the same time, they're representing my company out in the marketplace. Well, there's some anxiety in my mind about what's going to happen over the next month or so if that relationship ends while they're representing me. Well, that's a scary thing. So customers need a third party to create safety. So I would encourage asking regularly, make it part of a dashboard that's a quarterly report or at least an annual report. All right. So I hope this gives you some insights to dashboards, money, people, how to set this organization up, maybe a few practical things, some questions to ask, and even something for the CFO. That's going to be unusual. They love it when marketing starts talking to them and sales starts talking to them. We'll see you next time.
Look forward to sharing more about marketing technology on the next episode.